I had a former white teacher in high school, and she said, Amy, white students need you too. They need you just as much as the black and brown students. And that's why I take that slogan from the National Equity Project, every child deserves a black teacher.
Welcome to Black Educators Matter. This is more than a moment. It's a movement.
Hey, it's Danielle. Welcome to Black Educators Matter. Our goal is to share the stories of 500 Black educators. We will celebrate the impact and achievements, learn from the lessons and challenges, and highlight the important roles that educators play in all of our lives. I'm excited to welcome today's guest to our show. As a do now, please tell us your name, your role in education, and answer the question, why do Black educators matter?
Hello, my name is Amy Rowe. I've been an English teacher for 22 years, public school teacher. Black educators matter because every child deserves a black teacher. Every child deserves to see the presence of black educators, knowledge and wisdom and courage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Amy, so where are you from?
I am a northern girl from right outside of Chicago. And my parents are both from Alabama. So I'm a southern girl in a northern world.
That's quite the dichotomy happening, because I also have family in Alabama, and I know it moves quite differently than up north in Chicago, and we're in Chicago too. So what was your elementary school experience like growing up in the northern suburbs of Chicago?
I want to say I was fortunate. I was blessed. I was blessed, one, because of redlining. Think of redlining being something that's negative. But for me, my parents coming up from Montgomery, Alabama, they were pretty much forced to live in a certain community. And by them being forced to live in Bellwood, Illinois, I was fortunate to have black teachers. Miss Millen, my first grade teacher. Miss Simpson, my third grade. Miss Cavan, Miss Frazier, Miss Jordan. I was surrounded by black educators. My first teacher was my mom. My mom was one of the first black educators to integrate Alabama public school system. And just hearing her stories of how she didn't want to go and she was forced to go because they didn't integrate students. They integrated the teachers first. And they made black teachers leave. They handpicked black teachers to go teach in white schools. But they didn't make the white teachers go to the black schools, which is interesting.
Very interesting. Just like when Ruby Bridges did integrate the schools, they sent one black child over there. Integration was quite interesting.
All behind me. I keep her behind me.
Mm-hmm. So I told you had so much stuff behind you that's so cool. So what doll is that behind you?
Ruby Bridges.
Wow. Shout out to Ruby.
Yes. Shout out to Ruby Bridges. Yep.
Now, what about your high school experience? It's amazing that you were able to be surrounded by black educators in elementary school. Was high school the same for you?
Not at all. I went to a high school that was experiencing white flight in the 90s. And this particular high school was featured, I believe, in Newsweek magazine. And they featured a teacher who I had, a white male teacher. And he was not on board with integration. And what I've seen in so many current situations in high school is you have a mix of students in the building, but they're not mixed within their classes. So they're in a building, but they're on two ships. They're in the same water, but they're in two ships. And so my mom had to advocate. I remember her calling the assistant superintendent of schools to get me placed in advanced placement classes. And when I was there, it was just maybe one or two of us. And we formed a bond and coalition, and we were something to be reckoned with in those honors classes in the 90s. Because my mom was at the board meetings. I was at the board meetings. And I was very vocal to my teachers. So That was the name of the highest English class in our school. The development of Western thought.
So what does that mean?
White supremacist curriculum.
And we like to pretend that things have changed. Like, we like to pretend that education has grown and evolved. But the educator that I just spoke with before you said that she feels that integration did not serve us well. And when you're talking about your high school experience, it seems like that same sentiment is carried over into this episode.
Yeah, I have one African-American English teacher, two, Miss Wright, Miss Freeline Wright, Miss Alexis Wallace. Social worker was Miss Mona Johnson, but there were not many African American educators. We had a Black French teacher, Mr. Wallace, who people love. My brother had him. I was not fortunate to have him, but his presence, even though I didn't have him as a teacher, his presence was felt throughout the building.
So what led you to begin a career in education? You said you've been an English teacher for 22 years. Are you high school, middle school?
I'm high school. I have freshmen and seniors this year.
That's fun.
I have the bookends. I usually have what I call them the tadpoles and the toads, or the caterpillars and the butterflies. So I have freshmen and seniors. And when I entered college, my major was biology. I wanted to be a dentist. And I had an episode of slamming my finger in a car door. And I used to wear the acrylic nails and blood was everywhere. So I got out of that field. But what really led me to education is being in classes or being the only African American in predominantly white classes, because I attended a PWI, and social justice led me to being an educator. So that's one component. And also, you know, my mom was a middle school teacher, and I would go to school with her and help her with Black history programs and bulletin boards. But social justice and my mom.
How does a shared sense of identity exist between you and your Black students?
Wow. So for the longest time, I was the only Black teacher in my building. Now I'm one of two. And I rely heavily on my African American students as my break, my getaway. Even though they were, you know, much younger than me, but we had so much in common with family and food and tradition. And so I was thinking about them being in white spaces. And so I formed a club at the school called the Ebony Club. And the Ebony Club provided an atmosphere and environment for students of color to just be who they are. And it allowed me that opportunity to just be who I am. So I hope I answered the question.
No, you did. You did. I was taking notes. I love the idea of the Ebony Club, and that the students, it's just always so amazing having these conversations with educators. When we were growing up, it was made to feel like the adult in the space was like the owner of all of the knowledge and wisdom, and children need to get from the grown-up, but in reality, kids pour into adults just as much as adults pour into kids. And like, when educators talk about how they feel refueled and reconnected to the mission when they engage with their kids, it just shows like why it's so important for Black educators and for Black educators to stay in education, because we know the numbers are looking a little bit differently. As you've taught over these 22 years, have you seen the educator numbers change? You said you are now one of two Black teachers in your building.
I have not. I have not seen a mad increase. I believe that that begins with not just recruitment, but also retention. You know, it's okay to recruit and be the token, right? You have that one. But how are you supporting? How are you treating your Black educators? That's so important. Recruitment is fine to say, look, I hired a Black person, or I hired a Black administrator or a Black teacher. But what about the retention of keeping those Black teachers? Because I don't want to bring someone into a burning house. You know, Dr. King says, you know, breathe.
Yep, bringing them into a burning house. And also like the retention and growing of educators too, and investing in the educators that you bring on. I think that is a super important component too. where have you taught? So for 22 years, have you always taught in the same district?
No, so I started off in middle school and 1 year, got out of that. middle school teachers, all praises. So I did 1 year in middle school, and then I did 10 years at my former high school. I wanted to give back. So I did 10 years there, was predominantly black and brown school. And then because of politics and board members and buying garbage cans over buying books and giving contracts to people who don't look like us, I left and I went to a predominantly white school, and I was the second African-American teacher in their 50-year history. And the experience I experienced there are like no other. I had blackface placed in my mailbox. I had a student go to my division chair and provide her with some evidence that he did a background check on me. Yes. My second day, I had the police follow me for about a mile and a half until he pulled me over into the parking lot. But luckily I had a principal and a division chair who, they were not about that. And they contacted the chief of police to get the audio of that stop. But it was so embarrassing. Those years I spent at that high school, 3 years, probably worst time of my life. I was able to stay in a district. It's one of the highest paying school districts in the state of Illinois. So I was able to stay in the school district, and I transferred to another school. So I always say, you know, I was at a Lily White school. Now I'm at a Mother of Pearl. So the composition of students, the highest minority was Latinx students. And so I had a substitute, and he was not removed after saying this, even though I reported him. He had called me Dashiki Jones. I had braids in my hair. I had a counselor tell me I need to learn how to hide my blackness. And then an administrator tell me, oh, please, please don't say anything about this. And so what I tell young teachers, and I have many more examples, which I've shared on different platforms. What I tell young teachers is keep your receipts, because I have the cash register. And I make sure that in every instance, I'm documenting situations. So that's just, I also had a counselor. These are people who are very connected to students. Ask me, you know, do I wash my hair? I had one teacher who's a science teacher say, I had braids. She said, is that all of your hair? I said, is that your real hair color? Because don't come for me. Because I know you're not a true blonde. You're a science teacher. You see me every day. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, these are the experiences. I was not prepared for this conversation to go that way. I was not ready for that. When you said that you had left the middle school and you went to this new district, I knew that you were going to talk about some really empowering conversations that you had. Yeah. Sometimes I do live in a dream world.
No. So, all of those instances, and some I didn't share with you, propelled me to create the African American Leadership Team, because we have over 800 teachers in my district. And out of that over 800 teachers, it's maybe now, but at the time it was about 10 African American teachers in the district out of 800 plus. So we created the African American Leadership Team, and when creating the African American Leadership Team, each year we had an African American Teen Summit. And last year, because of COVID, we couldn't have it. It was going to be our fifth year, so we're going to do a virtual one. And it's power in numbers. I have my students, but I also needed to lean on my African American colleagues, because I was isolated as the only African American teacher in my building. But we have six high schools, and I'm like, wait, I'm sure this is going on. And so after connecting with them and creating the African American Leadership Team, we discovered that our narratives and our stories are so very similar. And power in numbers, we were able to form that group. And, you know, I say we are the conscience of that district. We are always meeting and speaking with administrators. Sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. And then after that, well, this past summer, formed the Justice Group, and the Justice Group created a manifesto for Black and Brown students. in which we presented to our superintendent and the board. And so we're in constant conversations for that, but we pretty much created the plan for our district.
This is just one of many stories, and we want to keep the conversation going.
Follow us on Instagram at blackeducators.matter.
Visit us online at www.blackeducatorsmatter.org.
Help build the movement by joining our Patreon.
Now, let's get back to our Project 500 podcast.
You said social justice led you to education, and it is obvious that you came ready to fight. It is obvious that you are not about to let the system continue to operate as it has been operating. And it's really incredible, like, even thinking about the white teacher who was against integration and that experience that you had as a student, you still are dealing with versions of him as peers.
Still. I'm still dealing with a Mr. Patterson. I never forget his name. And one story, I had him, this was in a junior class. This was the highest level of English you could take. They had combined English and history. And he walked past me, you know, odd walk, but he thought he was trying to walk like a stereotypical African-American male, like a pimp. So I asked him, I said, what's wrong with you? He said, don't all black men walk like this? I said, no. My grandfather, Cleo Gray, didn't walk like that. My dad, my three brothers, don't walk like that. But I said, you know what? This is not my fight. Let me call Cleona Ralph. Cleona Ralph was at the school.
Come on, Mom. See what I'm saying?
Because my mouth would get me in trouble, and she would have two fights.
Goodness. So thinking about all of the experiences that you've had as an educator and as a student, I will ask you this. What is the state of education in Black America, and how did we get here?
We are in trouble. We are in trouble because we are programmed to fit in a box with a test score. And we are measured up against test scores. We are measured up against a curriculum that is against us. We're late in the game. We're starting a race that has already been finished. So the test and the curriculum is not made for us. It never was. Education in this country was not set up for us to succeed. It wasn't. I mean, this is not an opinion. This is history. History shows us that. You know? And it definitely wasn't created for Black women. We don't have a culturally responsive curriculum or a curriculum that includes education about us. And I'm not talking about starting at slavery, the most detrimental time for us. I'm talking about going way back. But why are we teaching in math and science about the greats? Why, when you talk about scientists, the first thing people think of is Albert Einstein? No. But that has been pushed down our throats. That's been perpetuated. That, you know, these are the smart folks. Black folks, brown folks can't see themselves as being scientists and doctors and even educators.
You mentioned that even within a school, when integration would happen or when schools would have a diverse student body, it would be one school, but two schools.
Well, the research shows it. Every school that says that they are diverse, okay, you diverse on paper. Let's look in them classrooms. Let's look at the AP classes. Let's see who's in auto tech and who's in art. Let's see who is in intro to business versus a cooking class. Let's see who is in your advanced English classes versus your lower level English classes.
It is just, whew. As an English teacher, what are some of the challenges that you see that exist with how Black students are engaging with the work?
With the work? I can talk about testimonies from my students in the Ebony Club. there's not a lot of Black literature, Black culture infused into the curriculum. And students now have a voice. I love the TikTok and all the social media because that's how they're learning. And they're seeing that this is not right. Why don't I see myself in this curriculum? You know, if you can teach Shakespeare, you can teach Zora Neale Hurston, okay? I had someone say, well, Zora Neale Hurston, you know, she speaks in African-American vernacular English. That's so difficult. I ain't see you say that about Hamlet, but you're teaching him, you know? So our students struggle because they don't see themselves in the literature, in the history, in anything. You have to make it applicable to them. A change in times coming with a change in the curriculum. I was helping a student, I'll never forget, she was doing a worksheet. She was in a lower level history class, and I was so upset. One of the questions was, where did Socrates live? Who gave a care about where he lived? Why is that literal level question even of substance or importance? Why aren't we teaching that Socrates learned from the African mystery schools? Let's go there.
I'd like to go there.
Let's go to what the Greeks learned, what they learned. Because let me tell you, the Greeks give credit. But when we teach about the Greeks, we don't give the African mystery schools, Timbuktu and all them places credit.
We don't even learn that they existed.
At all. I didn't learn until I was in college.
How have you grown since you began your career? And oh, also, goodness. Right, you said that you started off, you were going to be a dentist till the nail accident, but how did you end up as an English teacher?
Being in classes with English classes, because when I started my first year of college, I didn't have to take the freshman English class because I had been in advanced placement English classes. So when I was a freshman, I was in classes with like sophomores. I took like a sophomore level English class. And just being the only person of color sometimes and being in different classes, I'm like, no, I have to do something. Being a dentist is not going to change the world. It's just not. And so I went to my advisor and I was like, I'm not really sure if I want to go down this route anymore. You know, let me take a intro to education 101 course. And even that course was just, it didn't include any African-American educators. I mean, the same theories, all the stuff that they stole from Native Americans or African-Americans. So I just knew I wanted to be an educator and be a change for Black and brown students and just be a change for students, because I had a former white teacher in high school and she said, Amy, the white students need you too. They need you just as much as the Black and brown students. And that's why, you know, I take that slogan from the National Equity Project. Every child deserves a Black teacher. Every child. To you know, see and witness and have a Black educator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what was the second part of that question?
Well, just how have you grown since you began your career?
Yes. So I've been at least 7 different teachers in my span. And I know each point where it ended and where it began. And I'm still evolving. Thank goodness I'm not the teacher I used to be. Because sometimes you teach how you were taught, right? Teachers are still teaching how they were taught. They still think that old traditional way of, you know, giving a worksheet and reading a book, answer the question, like that. No, you have to change. You have to change. And if you have not evolved and if you're still doing that same lesson plan you did when you first started, it's a problem.
Do you teach through TikTok? You like the social media?
Oh my goodness, yes. I learned so much from my students also. And I'm on IG. I try to keep it current.
Where can people connect with you if you have a social media platform where educators can follow you and see more about what you're working on?
Sure. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Touching Lives Teaching. And I am on Twitter. My Twitter is Amy, A-M-I, Elizabeth with a Z, 76. Amy Elizabeth, 76.
Oh, the social justice advocate who was born of a woman who integrated the Alabama schools, who brought that up to Bellwood and has not stopped trying to change the world since you first entered the classroom and when you had those exchanges with some of your, actually both of your educators, well, not both of your educators, but both types of educators, those that inspired and encouraged you, but also those that challenged you and pushed you to deserve and demand better. What advice do you have for first-year educators beyond the evolving and the evolution and the being accepting of your growth and evolution as an educator? Because I think that that was such a cool answer. Like, thank God I'm not the teacher I used to be. Thank yes. God, you know, like that evolution and growth is key for no matter what profession or industry you are in.
And I'm okay to say, I didn't know what I was doing. I meet former students and I'm like, look, if I had you my first 5 years of education teaching, I'm sorry. And they were like, no, not okay. It was okay. I'm like, nah, I was. No way. It was bad. I didn't know what I was doing. And what I would tell a young Black teacher, get a mentor. That mentor does not have to physically be in your building. Get a mentor, a Black mentor. Get one or two. Reach out on social media. Former educators. If you have, you know, great Black educators, get a mentor. Mm-hmm. And make sure that mentor is not angry or bitter because, you know, just because you brown don't mean you down sometimes. So it's important to get a mentor. And I know the statement self-care is so broad, but if I could do things over, I would live my life as a young teacher. I was so focused on teaching and education and schooling and not enjoying myself. One, because back then I was broke. So as you accumulate more, you're able to do more. But every chance a young Black educator gets to do more, enjoying Black teacher associations, like the Black National Association of Black Educators, the National Equity Project, find outlets where you can meet other Black educators.
And create your own, like you did with the Ebony Club, with your students, the African American Leadership Team, with your colleagues, and even the Justice Group. Like the evolution of your teaching practice and also your dedication to social justice is evident. So thank you so much for sharing your story. Now, you mentioned some Black educators, including but not limited to your mom. Are there any other Black educators that you would like to thank?
Absolutely. I'm friends with a few on social media, and I always tag one in particular. I was able to spend some time with her a couple of years ago in Selma, Alabama. That's where she's from. She was my fourth grade teacher. And I always go with the hashtag Hattie taught me. Her first name is Hattie. Now, you know, you can't call an elder by their first name, but I always go Hattie taught me, Cleona taught me, Miss Simpson, Miss Millen, Miss Frazier, Miss Jordan. I had some amazing, Miss Freeline Wright, had some amazing African-American educators and still do. I'm still learning from them every day.
Every day. Well, thank you again for coming on the show and sharing your story, walking us through your journey and sharing those incredible high highs, but also like some of those disturbingly low lows. But the fact that you took all of those experiences, you keep pouring into education, you went back to serve at your old high school, and you are building these coalitions as you go and as you grow is just incredible. So everything that you've done, it was, it is, and it always will be worth it. So thank you.
You're welcome. Take care. In love and power. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Educators Matter.
Are you ready to share your story? Visit us online at www.blackeducatorsmatter.org to sign up.
Remember, make excellence equitable and thank a Black teacher today.